Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Be Customer Led. I have my first repeat guest, which I'm super excited about. So Gary Magenta, I'm lucky enough to call him a friend. He's been a mentor to me for a long time, has really just given me just such sage counsel over the years. One of the nicest people you'd ever meet, frankly, as well. Was at Root Inc. for a long time. And I think, listeners heard the first show with Gary, was there for over 20 years, I believe, Gary, right?
21. Yeah. 21 almost 21. Years.
And, he's just started his own company called the Magenta Mix, themagentamix.com. You got to go check it out. We're going to talk a little bit about his new business and what he's doing, what he's focusing on, but we're also going to talk about some pretty topical stuff right now, whether that is, you know, what's happening with return to work, future of work, you know, leadership dynamic in there, and what's happening to employees versus company, employer versus employee kind of centric approaches, and how that's impacting strategy as well. So Gary, welcome to the show again, man. I'm so excited to have you back on.
Well, thank you. I mean, when you say I'm your first repeat guest, it makes me think that I must have really screwed things up last time. Mm. I didn't get it right, and you're kind enough to offer me a second chance, so I appreciate it.
No. It means that you were so amazing. I had to have you back on.
Well, you've been generous so far, so I'll try to live up to just half of positioned me.
I'm sure you will, and then some. So, let's get into maybe some of the more like top of mind, like what's, you know, I want to talk about the company, of course, but maybe we can do that in the back half of the show, Gary. You're out there and you're talking to a lot of people around sort of, you know, where sort of the not only the future of work, but just generally how do companies even approach a return to work in the more immediate sense, right? So many companies out there are, pushing out their return dates, rightly so. I'm not sure that a lot of companies even have a good strategy, frankly, to be able to return people to work. It almost feels like they're just setting a date, everybody come back, and it'll be like it was before, which it's not going to be. I went back to the office in my old company a couple of days a week, and it felt really, really weird to be there. I'm curious, like, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? How are you thinking about it?
All right. Well, there are three major things that I'm hearing in the marketplace today: return to work, future of work, labor shortage. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully we can touch on those things in our conversation today. But when you think about return to work, this is one of those things that we are just not in control over, right? So obviously everybody sees in the news every day the Delta variant and the ICUs overrun with patients. Those who are in that trifecta of having had COVID, had both vaccines if they got two doses, and then have had COVID again and can still, in rare cases, end up in the hospital. So I think organizations are trying to do the right thing, Bill, by saying, look, we want to be really careful. We want to be cognizant that there is still an opportunity for people to get sick, and we don't want that to happen on our watch. Mm-hmm. So the first thing was, we're all going back in September. The water's going to be great. Kids will be in school. We'll be in work. And, you know, before you know it, it's a two martini, 2 hour lunch again, and everybody's happy. And that clearly has pushed back to, all right, what we're hearing now is that this Delta variant may run through the system by, you know, January. Let's start to think about a 2022 return to work. And the reality is, I don't believe any of us know. And it doesn't matter where you sit on this. You believe in the vaccine, you don't believe in the vaccine, you're a Republican, you're a Democrat, you're an independent. The reality is, we don't know. So I think right now, the first thing is, as leaders, we need to be flexible. And that's good, because when we do return to work, our employees do not want it to be a return to 2020. Mm-hmm. Nobody's interested in that same rigidity. So flexibility is not only important in the moment as we plan for return to work, but in the actual return to work time, when it's time to get there, there is nobody that I'm talking to who wants to do that 5 days a week.
Nobody. 100%.
Nobody. And what's interesting is, so I've heard some two things, and it was related to the same thing. It was related to buildings. Two large Fortune companies who will remain nameless have said, and I've heard it come from their executive team's mouths, but we just put together this great campus. What are we going to do with the building if it's not full?
You're going to lease it out to 20 companies that want their, you know, people coming in at different times.
Hey, of the week, right? Vertical farming, man, whatever it is, you're not going to force people in 5 days a week and expect them to stay, because the other end of that spectrum, as we've also heard, is, hey, what we've learned here is that productivity hasn't gone down. It's actually gone up in many cases. Why don't you go live wherever you want to and we'll be fine. And so those are the two spectrums. I just spent untold dollars on a new campus or modifying my existing campus. We're not going to leave it empty, all the way to, we are going to divest ourselves of offices. My sister-in-law is a senior vice president in an organization who has decided to shutter some of their offices because they recognize they don't need them anymore. And then other people, obviously, we all know their companies are talking about full time. We've got to be talking about flexibility. And that is part of the future of work. They tie together. So what I'm hearing in just a soundbite here is that we don't know when we're going to return to work, or that at least is my observation. We've got to remain flexible because our people do not want to return to 2020.
Yeah. And a lot of what I'm hearing too, right? And maybe that's part of your point around flexibility, Gary, is, you know, employees want the choice too, right? And for the first time in a long time, they feel like they've been dictating their own schedule on some level, and being able then to take that away. It's like, you know, you gave your high schooler, you know, the keys to your car. They've been driving it around forever for a long time. And all of a sudden you say, hey, I need that back now, right? That doesn't really fly.
No, well. And it's not. You can't ask for it back. And so there's something interesting happening at every level, whether you're a frontline hourly worker all the way up to the executive suite, is that there, I believe, is a wholesale paradigm shift in the control. It used to be that it was an employer-centric work environment. The shift is not happening. I believe it has officially happened to an employee-centric model. So if we just start at the hourly worker, the hourly worker is now saying, I want to work when I want, where I want, and a schedule that may not be the same every week. Mm-hmm. I want control over that. And so if we just think about, fast food or hospitality, I work for a brand that has 5 locations. Well, can I look at a schedule that allows me to say, oh, there are shifts open within these 5 locations that make my perfect schedule? And I would like to pick and choose where, when, what times, et cetera, that I work. Well, that's really difficult right now in today's environment. But tomorrow, because the technology may not be there in some instances. I'm working with one company that is actually working on building that technology. But the reality is that employers are so desperate for work, for workers, they have to say yes. They should be in a place to say yes. And at the corporate office, the funny thing here is, productivity has not gone down based on people working from home. And there is an article, I can't remember where I read it, about the amount of executive level people who have actually taken on a second executive level job and are doing both. Because when you're not in the water cooler conversation, when you're not going out to lunch with colleagues, when you're not spending 2 hours a day commuting, some people can actually fit in 2 executive level jobs and do them effectively.
Interesting. So tell me more about that. Yeah, no, tell me a little bit more about that.
The executive level?
Yeah. Like, how is that fitting in now?
So the executive level, first, let's just start with productivity. The myth of, if we're not together, we can't be productive, has been burst. That is not to say that people emotionally don't need that connection. There is a chemical reaction when we get together. It's necessary. We will go back to that to some extent. But we've also eliminated a lot of the roadblocks that are in our way to being efficient. I say the water cooler, and I'll say it again, you know, the everything from taking all the time to for the office gossip, the meeting before the meeting after the meeting. Mm-hmm. Our calendars are filled and we're getting a lot done. And it has allowed people to say, huh, what else do I want to do? Am I going to take up golf with this? If I'm really productive,
yeah,
do everything I need to do in my job and the hours that work for me, and then care for a family member, take up a hobby, et cetera. Or with this extra time, let me juggle multiple interests with two different organizations.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is being done secretively. So what I understand from the limited amount that I've read on this is that people aren't saying, hey, by the way, I have two jobs now.
That's right. Or by the way, I moved to Denver and I've got another job too, right?
Such a good example. You know, people are moving, and it happened to me with coworkers when I was saying, oh, let's grab lunch in downtown Chicago. I can't. I'm living in Rhode Island now. Oh, when did that happen? When did you move 1,200 miles from our office? I'm just curious.
6 months ago, right? Yeah.
6 months ago.
Yeah.
But who knows? And is that person now going to uproot? I'm thinking about a very specific person. Is that person, and he didn't do anything wrong, right. But is that person going to now uproot his two young children and family and move back? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. They'll likely find another job if the company is asking them to do that, right?
100%.
How do you feel about those organizations? There's two questions. One is, I want to talk about like the impact on innovation by being fully remote. And right, and a lot of what you've done in the past, and certainly what you're focused on now as well, is, you know, creating current state, but also creating future states. But how is that impacting leadership's ability to grow? Right. Because like all of a sudden, and particularly if I'm a new leader and now I've been Zooming the whole time and now I've got to be maybe back in the office, that's a completely different skill set, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'll just share with you what is probably personal preference, but also what I would advise and believe business should do. To your point, you're onboarding somebody new. Having office interaction, human interaction, face to face when safe and appropriate is absolutely necessary. So here's a little quick story. I'm on the phone with a client of mine this week of the Magenta Mix, and it is somebody that I've known for many years. And she said, we've hired somebody new. We have never met him. And 6 months in, we have found out that he is not the right fit.
Oh boy.
If we had met him, we may have made a different choice. If we were in the office, we could have got here 3 months earlier. And so the hard rules of we're never coming back, I don't believe that's the case. We're going to go back.
Sure.
We're going to go back full time? Absolutely not. But when you think about things like innovation, onboarding, culture, there is a benefit to having in-person interactivity. So how do we do that in a way that is flexible enough to retain top talent and also flexible enough and meaningful enough to make sure that we progress our business? So in my own experiences, doing offsites, I did two offsites recently at two CEOs' houses in the backyard, outside, open area, very safe.
Very cool.
And the leadership teams are getting together because we're talking about culture. We're talking about strategy. We're talking about future state. We're talking about innovation. We're talking about people. All of these things really are accelerated if we can get together in person. But we're just not doing it in the office. And let me just say this. Getting together at somebody's house makes it feel more personal. It's so much better than a sterile office environment. This pandemic has created a level of intimacy that I think is fantastic. So
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I was actually, when you were saying that, I was just thinking like, how cool would it be just be in the CEO's backyard, maybe having a little glass of wine, margarita or vodka tonic, right? And talking about strategy, what people want to do, how do we want to change the firm? How do we want to grow? That actually be like a real thing. People should start doing that more if they're not doing it already.
It should be a real thing. Now there's some pros and cons, right? So one of the meetings, the senior team couldn't stop talking about the CEO's yacht that was on the water in the waterfront house. And so I think maybe some jealousy spurred there to the point where, as a facilitator of the meeting, I said, okay, can we get over the yacht? I mean, the guy's the CEO. He's got some bucks. Let's move on. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So there was a joke. And then there's just one guy that just came up and picked up dog poop from the backyard. That was the job. He was a contractor. So you're in the CEO's your CEO's backyard, and there's a bit of a lifestyle thing there, that's a true story. But when I think about it, the benefit far outweighs anything else. So you're inviting somebody into your house. Isn't that the way we create deep, meaningful relationships? You're having lunch at somebody's house in their backyard. That's how lifelong friendships are formed.
Yeah. And I mean, you just kind of get the connotation of like the backyard barbecue, you know, having a beer, your guard is down, right? You're a little bit more authentic.
You might say things, and you're in shorts.
And you're in shorts. That's right. You're comfortable, et cetera, right? You're having a great time. There's a smile on your face versus you're in some corporate boardroom. You're looking at like slide number 98 on somebody's pitch deck and you're trying to figure it out.
So to that point, and not to belabor it, but I think this is maybe just anecdotally important. We were a different house, not the yacht house, at a different CEO's house, great house. And we are outside. And at the end of the meeting, there was true emotion. People connected at a level, in this leadership level for planning, that I know in my decades of experience would never have happened in a boardroom where people are running out because there's someone coming in saying, can I grab you for a minute? There's all kinds of commotion. People feel like they can leave. You know, we're going to take a bio break, and then people leave and go back to their office and get on a conference call, and they're five minutes late. None of those things were happening here. And there was an emotional connection at the end that I'm not too embarrassed to say. I got a little welled up.
That's
like,
awesome.
Look at the way this team has connected and bonded. And there's no doubt in my mind that that was in part due to the setting.
Do you think they're going to continue that practice? I wonder.
I just got off the phone with them talking about the next one. So the answer is yes.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the shift then from employer-centric to employee-centric.
Yeah.
You know, how long do you think this is going to last? Especially if we go back too, right?
Oh, this is change. This is change. Those organizations who will thrive in the future will become employee-centric when you think about accommodating work. The future of work is all about, we want the right talent in the right place at the right time. And we care less about, are you taking vacation here or there? If you're in the office 5 days a week or 2 days a week, we care less about that. Work is now an integrated part of your life as opposed to two separate areas of your life. And employers who will win in the future, who are winning now, are going to recognize you're an integrated part of somebody's life. You are not their entire life for 8 or 10 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Every day, 5 days a week.
And give you the space to go on sabbaticals, do wellness days, you know, take the time you need, et cetera, right? Like long gone are the days of, you know, I actually wonder, like, people in the U.S. are going to start doing like the European model, like just 4 weeks in August, I'm out.
People started to do it this, they've started to do it already.
Yeah.
They have started to, I felt like last summer. So when I was with Root, I ran our London office. Now I didn't live there. It was right about 9/11 that I was assigned that post, and it ended up to be a commuter role. Mm. So I'm going back and forth from there. But what I noticed, this last summer is I was saying to people, I feel like I'm working in London. This summer, people were taking big chunks of time off and being unapologetic about it, which I thought was awesome. I have one of my sons is a successful consultant, and he does not get out of bed before a certain time. It's like, I work these hours. I'm not a morning person. It's part of being a millennial, I think. I'm not a morning person. I want to start at this time. And I'm like, this is a change. And it's not just him. It's his wife too.
Wow. And the companies are totally fine with it. They're like, that's
100%.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing is, of course, today we're all working across time zones. So he lives in the Midwest, and a large part of his team is in the West Coast. Mm. And so that works out.
Yeah. It's kind of easy. That's fascinating. Those are two great, great stories. Let's talk about leadership a little bit. There's a completely different skill set that is required, not only just from a Zoom perspective and, you know, leadership via, you know, via digital. How do you think it's going to change when we do go back to the office, even if it's a couple of days a week? What are the types of things that you think leaders are going to need to be focused on or do more or less of to be able to accommodate this new normal?
Yeah. So I can go really high up and then come down to the nitty gritty. But at the highest thing, we have to, it's time to retool our strategies. And our strategies have to include people as a key component. For years, I was with companies working on strategies or strategy execution, and it would be around, okay, here's the business need. Here's what, you know, it's a product or a service in the competition, mm-hmm. all those very important things. And then as an afterthought, so what does this mean to our people and how should we engage them? And I think the shift is that when you're talking about strategy, you're actually putting people right up front in that. Mm-hmm. What do we need to do to engage our people who are ultimately responsible for delivering this strategy? How do we make a strategy that meets the needs of our customers and our people? So people have got to be top on strategy. Mm-hmm. When you get, and we have to retool strategies now. If you're not doing it now, you're behind the eight ball. Let's get moving. Because strategies include how are we going to work together? We also have to look at how the marketplace has changed. It's changed dramatically. It will continue to change. Mm-hmm. When you get down to the nitty gritty and actually talking to people, we have got to move full force now. There's no more debate. We're not in a transition. We have fully moved to great leaders listen. Great leaders ask powerful questions and they listen. The idea of leaders being in tell mode is gone. Mm-hmm. It's done. And the pandemic has accelerated that transition. Today, if you are a great leader, you are listening to the wants and needs. Now that's 360, the wants and needs of your employees, the wants and needs of your customers and the marketplace. But it used to be, let's listen to the wants and needs of the customers, and then we'll tell employees what we're going to do.
Yeah.
A great leader now has to listen in surround sound.
That's a great way to put it. All stakeholders, right? I mean, customers, employees, shareholders, partners. I mean, really to everybody in that ecosystem that you're working in.
And for sure. And it's not just their wants and needs. It's they understand the marketplace better than anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite example of that, or a couple of examples of that, are really ones that everybody can relate to. When you think about the change that the marketplace wants, it could be something simple like all day breakfast at McDonald's. Mm. And that came from franchisees listening to customers. Franchisees had to get that up the corporate ladder. We have to listen to the wants and needs of our customers. We can all, if we listen to our employees and our franchisees, they have their finger on the pulse. You know, the Frappuccino really started with two baristas.
Yeah, out in California, the West Coast.
Out in California, right? So this idea of listening is beyond just, well, do I want to work in the office full-time or part-time? It's listening to our employees who have their fingers on the pulse of our customers, whether it's B2B or B2C, and not thinking that innovation is in a vacuum. So when you ask me what's got to change with leadership or what's the latest with leadership, it is listening, and it's listening for everything from how do I want to conduct my work life as an employee to what is my marketplace knowledge that if you listen to me, you can accelerate the pace of change in the products and services that we're offering to stay ahead of competition.
So does the employee, back to that shift from employer to employee, does that also then accelerate the dynamic of your workforce? Because not everyone's an employee, right? But your workforce being a bigger source of innovation for your company?
So my last book, not to be over promotional here, but my last book, Blowing Up the Box, is exactly on that, which is we need to use our employees' voice to innovate in our business. And so that book is a lot about how do you get those key elements from employees and make sure there's a direct and clear pathway from the front line to the executive office of information, a pathway of information.
Yeah. I remember in my days at Chase, the head of the home lending business at the time, I won't mention his name, but wonderful guy. He used to read all of the employee suggestions that would come through in that business. And they would trickle through like onesies and twosies a day. But then all of a sudden he started doing this really interesting thing. He started emailing the person and thanking them for their feedback. And he would put the owner of that business, of the feedback, essentially the person responsible to fix it, on the note and say, hey, are we really treating our customers this way? Or, you know, is this something that we can fix quickly? And then all of a sudden, you know, the onesies and twosies per day turned into like 50 a day. And that was a really important dynamic, just very top-down modeling. Just a great example of someone who was not only customer-led, but also employee-led. And it really did wonderful things for the culture in the home lending business. And he was a big driver of that.
I love that story because it puts the employee as the customer advocate.
Yeah.
And that's really the job.
Yeah.
If you're a frontline employee and everybody is connected to the customer, whether they are serving the customer or serving someone who does serve the customer, we have to empower those people to bring the voice of the customer to life in our business every day and be a champion to right the wrongs.
Yeah, you want to balance that with feedback, obviously, and what's happening in your data, et cetera, right? But
yeah, we're looking for consistent themes, right? Yeah. So it's not a one-off. I mean, everybody should be heard. But if it's not a consistent theme, you look at it and you say, okay, that's interesting. That seems like a one-off. It's not who we are or what we're doing. When you're listening and you're hearing consistency, that's when you say, oh, first time it's interesting. Second time I'm curious. Third time I want to know if there's a trend that I'm leaning in to say, if this is really happening, good or bad, I want to know about it and take action on it.
So I've been noodling a lot around this idea, Gary, around, you know, technology, the digitalization, it's just everyone's got a digital solution for something out there now. And a lot of it, obviously, due to necessity out of COVID, no one was going to a store, no one was going to the bank branch, et cetera. And we talked a little bit about strategy and thinking and changing strategy. Obviously, digital now, and I also feel like a lot of it's no longer digital first now. I feel like we're going into this AI first kind of environment too. But
for sure,
how do you think? And my view is that we've rushed as an broad industry has rushed to creating digital solutions and doorways for customers to engage. There will and is starting to be more backlash around poor tech. And this kind of comes full circle with your comment around listening to your employees and listening to your customers, obviously, as well. But we're going to see a lot of reinvestment in digital because, hey, I needed to put something up there. So I just got something up there, just, you know, an MVP. Damn be that it works well or not. I'm curious if you're seeing that or if you hear that at all.
Yeah, yes, I'm going to try to answer your question and you'll tell me if I do or not. First, we are in this place where the customer is expecting a digital solution, a telephonic solution, and in some cases, an in-person solution. Mm-hmm. So if you just think about your mobile provider, I want to be able to go in the store, call them on the phone, and either chat online or get into a site that I can navigate. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's an expectation in many organizations now that by the customer that you're going to deliver to me three levels of engagement. And within each level, there are some options. So we do have customers that want to be self-service and we still have customers that want to be very high touch. We have to accommodate them. Mm-hmm. Some of the tech, to your point, that's come out has been because the pandemic has driven us there, accelerated that. The AI that's out there now, in some cases, is so horrible that you get caught in these loops where you are smashing your phone against the wall and writing letters to the president's office as you're blogging how bad it is. It's just horrific. Did that answer your question? No, it didn't. Okay, thanks. Yeah. I got stuck. I'm sorry. I'm going to be tangential for a minute.
Go for it.
One of the major shared ride providers who will be nameless, I was at the Colorado airport. I put in for a pickup. The person said, I can't find you. I said, I'm at C4. I'm at C4. You're not there. and I believe was being scanned, picked up somebody and drove them to my location. And as I called the guy, watching him, because you could track him, I'm calling him saying, you don't have me in the car. And the guy in the back seat is yelling, you're taking me in the wrong direction. Now, I believed that we were both being scammed because I got charged and then that guy got charged when he changed the final location. You with me?
Oh my gosh, I am. This is horrible.
And because I called him so many times, I was blowing up his phone. He just answered and put it down on his front seat so it would stop ringing. And I heard the whole dispute between he and the passenger. And I texted him and told him by phone, you don't have the right person, but he clearly wanted two $54 fares. All right. I want to trust the best in everybody, but this guy, I don't believe had good intention.
You should have done like the 911 emergency through the app.
Yeah. Well,
that would have worked.
So the 911 emergency I felt was that is if you're being kidnapped.
Yes, true.
I was now safe in their competitor's car. And I felt like, you know, I didn't want to do that. But going through the AI system to resolve a complex issue, like it says I completed the trip in a car that I was never in and I want my $54 back, was a 1 week endeavor.
Oh my gosh.
In the technology solution. So I have written in my second book, 720 Haircuts, there is what's called a Nexpert. And that is, by the way, it never caught on. So I'm very hopeful that this
podcast. Let's do it. Well,
nobody has ever caught on to Nexpert, but you should be able to resolve your basic problems through AI or in an online function and never get to a human being. But it should be easy to find a human being. And by the time you get there, it's because it's a complex problem like the one I just described. Mm-hmm. And you need a next level expert or a Nexpert to help you solve that. And the problem with this is, and I'll just share with you that this is where I think it's going to be important, is you need to make it easy to find a live human being when you need an expert. And this company hid it in the bowels under a mountain somewhere. In order to find the number, you have to know the secret handshake. And I finally got to the number and then to the people to get to resolution. And it was a nightmare. And in the future, few things. Let me answer. Some of the technology is just horrible today.
It
reminds me of old dial-up when the internet first came out. Yes, that's how old I am. And so you would do that dial-up and get the squeal and it took you 5 minutes and everything was slow. We'll get there, Bill. The technology is bad today. We did have to rush things out as a society. And I believe over the next 18 months, it's going to improve dramatically. AI is still in its infancy, no matter what you say and or what the AI people say, it's still in its infancy. It's going to get better. What must happen is we have to give our customers the ability to resolve things through AI at the basic level and get them to a human being who can help them when it's next level problems.
I'm even seeing a lot, just kind of given my current line of work, Gary, is I'm seeing a lot of even just the AI figuring out for you, right? Just like you think about journey orchestration, right? Like how do you create the next best experience for someone when you know that they're in trouble because they're putting too many clicks on a website, they're on a page for too long, whatever that might be, is how do you get someone, you know, in an automated way down the path of business success from a business's definition perspective, but also for the customer to kind of do what they came to do anyway, right? And there are all sorts of reasons why customers may not complete a task or make the purchase, whatever it is. But I'm hoping that we see more and more of that AI doing that automatically. So even connecting you to a live person, because it's smart enough to realize I can't help this person anymore. I don't have to ask them to press the little button at the bottom of the screen of the app to connect with someone and contact, you know, customer support.
Yeah. I think what you're suggesting here is that AI is smart enough to know that you're going in circles and the AI is going to get you to somebody.
Yeah. I mean, that exists today. AI is smart enough today to be able to do that. I just don't think that people are really focused on that.
Let's take this back to the labor shortage.
Yeah.
Why did we rush to AI? We rushed to AI because, you know, needs changed and things intensified and we have a labor shortage all at the same time. So the question becomes now, how do we staff our call centers or whatever it may be at the right level to be able to take the calls
and the right talent
to be there to support there with the right talent?
Yeah. Yeah, that is a huge question right now going on among all contact centers, actually. I'm seeing that firsthand. Hey, I'm mindful of your time, and I don't want people dropping in the podcast, and I want to do get to the Magenta Mix. So you were at Root for 21 years. You've started this really cool company. Folks should really check out the site. What are you focusing on, and what are you trying to do different maybe this time?
So first, always say, listen, when you're somewhere for 21 years and you've got my personality, that's some magic in a bottle right there. Not everybody wants to deal with this for 21 years. And not everybody finds value in an organization to take them through a good chunk of their career. And so that was just the best possible experience that anybody could have had. And I loved literally every second of it. So great, great organization and great experience. And what I'm looking at right now is a new era of business. You're bringing up so many of the points, Bill, here. And I wanted to create an organization focused on a new era of business with a really accelerated approach for leaders and companies to take in their journey for strategy, their strategy journey. So if I think about it, there's a few things that we're trying to do. And that is, number one, just cut through the clutter to get clear on what it is that is in our way of success today. Get laser focused on our strategy for how to move forward and enable and empower our leaders to take action. So up front, cutting through the clutter is the first thing. There's so much noise happening that I'm finding leadership teams in small, mid, and large size companies who have not pinpointed what it is that they're after yet, but they're already in motion. And so there's, you know what happens there when you run. Well, you just give the example with technology. We know we need something, so let's just hurry and do it. And then you end up with a sub-optimized, subpar solution. So first thing in Magenta Mix, there's three things that we're offering. One is advisory services. Mm-hmm. Really working with leaders and organizations to get crystal clear on the current state of their business, their desired state, desired future state, and create a strategic plan on how to get there. And we start first by gaining absolute clarity on where we are and where we're going. So that's advisory services. Mm-hmm. The second piece of it that is really important is leadership for individual leaders and team coaching. Many organizations come in to large companies, small companies, medium-sized companies, and say, hey, we're going to help you with a strategic plan. They drop the deck and they leave. Mm-hmm. Where I see the opportunity, and it's playing out nicely, is wouldn't we all benefit from that leadership coach who will help us from discovery right to the implementation? Mm-hmm. Get this team through each phase. And that's working out very well. The support is needed to keep the focus, to keep the diligence and accountability, and to really make adjustments along the way. So let's get clear on that strategy. Let's get aligned on it. Then let's coach our leaders and leadership teams through it, their role, responsibility, right through to execution. And then finally, it's related, but not in that category, is there are areas or topics of expertise that we have at the Magenta Mix that we are doing keynotes and workshops to bring larger groups of people in. So if our organization is focused on being better communicators, mm-hmm. we've got a storytelling workshop that engages large numbers of people, either virtually or in person, in that. Helping our leaders become better coaches. So our leaders need to be better storytellers. Mm-hmm. We know that if you want to get a strategy out there. So we're focused on keynotes and workshops on that. Our leaders need to be better coaches. And when I say leaders, I'm talking about down to the frontline leaders level. Mm-hmm. So we've got workshops and keynotes on that. Innovation is important in everybody's business. We've got a keynote and workshop on that. So I won't bore you with all of those. You can go to themagentamix.com for those. But we are looking at helping leaders and then bring those messages out to frontline leaders as well.
Very cool. Well, I'm excited to see your success. I know you've been you've been an inspiration to me, Gary, for a long time.
Likewise. And, thank you. You're the smartest person I know on this call.
I doubt that. And I know my listeners definitely doubt that. I think it's awesome what you're doing. I really love the concept of not just create, you know, helping you create the strategy, and then I'll see you when it goes south and you need some more help, right? Providing support through that process. And then even just sort of the workshops and the keynotes, et cetera, those really do support that work at the end of the day, right? I mean, delivering strategy is as much about change management as it is about, you know, just execution.
It is. And engaging everybody's hearts and minds in that, yep, around that change. And for me, the workshop piece of it is involving people with their hands and their hearts and their heads to be a part of that. When you think about innovation, we talked about breakfast all day at McDonald's and the Frappuccino at Starbucks. I am in fact creating live experiences where you can bring your knowledge as an individual contributor or a people manager at a line level to the table and expose your thoughts and ideas to leadership in the moment. Hmm. And so when you get those groups together and they say, hey, what we believe our customers really want and what would be innovative against the competitor is to do this, and leaders are in the room and they hear it almost like a Shark Tank environment, there's powerful change. I feel heard, and leaders get a direct pipeline to the front line.
Yeah. I mean, just it's so different than to read something on a page than to hear it, you know, with someone with sort of the inflection and the tone and the rate of their speech, right? I mean, there's something very just much more powerful in that.
Yeah. Yes. And so I said leaders need to be better listeners, and our frontline is going to require their employer to hear them. They want to be heard. And why shouldn't they? Maybe this will be helpful. What I know is that our frontline employees have exactly the same IQs as our leadership team. They're just either at a different stage in their career or on a different path in life. But they do have the exact same IQs on average. Mm. They're smart. Why aren't we listening to them more? And what I'm trying to accomplish in the workshop is to appeal to their highest level of thinking and to have those thoughts heard by leadership at the same time.
We're gonna end it on that note, because that is an exclamation mark if I ever heard one. Gary, thanks so much for being on the show again. Another amazing show, by the way. You may have to be my first third time guest at some point.
I'm in. I'm already scheduling it on my calendar. Thank you, Bill. I think the world of you and your work, and you are a true leader, and I know inspiration to others. So it's always good to spend time with you. Thank you for inviting me back.
That's very kind of you to say. Wonderful to have you on the show, and I know we'll be in touch. All right, everybody, Gary Magenta, one more time here. Check out themagentamix.com. Really incredible stuff. And if you don't know Gary, hit him up, introduce yourself. You will not be disappointed. One of the best people that I know. All right, everybody, we're out. Talk to you soon, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at BeCustomerLed.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out.